everyone, I'm Lenore Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. A floating hospital recently began providing free surgeries to patients in Senegal. Mercy Ships is said to perform as many as 1,700 surgeries over the next 10 months. Volunteers serving with Mercy Ships have begun providing the free surgeries to patients on the hospital ship docked in the port of Dakar, Senegal. The start of surgeries kicks off a 10-month stay in Dakar for the world's largest charity hospital ship, the Africa Mercy. For more on Mercy Ships, I spoke to Dr. Peter Lenz, Mercy Ships International Medical Officer. Take a listen. Dr. Peter Lenz, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are an international medical officer with Mercy Ships. First of all, can you give us a sense of what Mercy Ships is?
So Mercy Ships is a faith-based non-governmental organization that operates the world's largest non-governmental hospital ship in Africa. The ship is essentially a surgical specialty unit that goes to a country for about 10 months. And we do a variety of surgery for people who don't have access, as well as capacity building to improve the surgical healthcare systems in the countries that we visit.
Basically, the services that you provide are based on the ship. So is all care provided on board of the ship?
The majority of the care is provided on the ship. So the ship itself has 75 inpatient beds, 5 operating rooms, a 32-slice CT scanner, a modern lab. So think of it as a floating hospital. We do all the surgery on the ship. We do have a dental clinic that provides dental services that is done off the ship.
Okay. So talk to us about the type of surgeries that you conduct. How simple and how complex are they?
Because we're in a country for as long as 10 months, some of the surgeries are quite complex. Generally, the surgeries are across 5 disciplines. So maxillofacial, head and neck surgery, so cleft lips, cleft palates, large goiters, jaw tumors, amelioblastomas. General surgery, which includes hernias, soft tissue tumors that are benign. Pediatric orthopedics, most of this is lower limb deformities, so think of things like bow legs, uncorrected club foot, and various other bone deformities. Ophthalmology, primarily cataract, restoring sight. Plastic reconstructive surgery, many of this is burn contracture release and other reconstructive surgery. And then a program in women's health, predominantly around obstetric fistula repair.
Where does the process start from the service providing perspective? And then we will talk about the administrative perspective. But when you go to a country, how do you select the patients? Where do you find them? How do they find you?
So it varies a little bit country to country. But in terms of screening, we will advertise in the country that we are coming. We always go places only at the invitation of the government, so we are working in partnership with the government and the ministries of health. In some countries, the governments would like us to screen patients throughout the country, and we will work in partnership with the local healthcare infrastructure to identify patients. So the process in terms of where the patients come from varies slightly from country to country, depending on the level of development and sort of how that partnership in that particular country is designed. For instance, in Senegal, where the ship is currently, it arrived about 4 weeks ago, we are screening patients in all 13 districts throughout the country.
So then you advertise in advance and people know that you are coming in the country, and then they come and they line up for the screening. Talk to us about the process. What are some of the reasons why a patient may not be selected versus another?
So the primary reason patients are not selected is because they present with a problem that is sort of not something we can address either surgically or within the specialties that that we offer. We try to select patients where we can have the most impact. So they have to have the right condition. And generally the problem we face is there are many more patients that need help than we can provide. But we, for instance, in Senegal, where we sort of try to divide the available slots among the 13 different regions so that there's sort of equality in terms of, who can access service.
You talked about the government, contacting the government. And first of all, who contacts you? Is it the government who contacts you, or do you send out different requests to come to a country? How does this work?
So we've been working in Africa now for almost 30 years, so we're pretty well known. But generally, yes, it's a process where we will reach out to contacts within the government of countries and begin discussions. Generally, the process usually begins two to two and a half years before the ship will visit. So we will reach an agreement with the government for a timing of the ship visit. Prior to that, we will then do a fairly detailed assessment of the needs and the current state of the health system. And based on that, we will then design the surgical program for that country. We may begin some pre-ship capacity building programs in terms of some training, and then obviously the ship visit occurs, and then there's some programmatic activities that may continue after the ship's there as well. So it's really a sort of five-year engagement with the country from start to finish.
So once you leave a country, for the next few years, you're still in contact to provide follow-ups, or is that?
It's not so much follow-up of the patients, because we try to design the surgical care, and because we're there that long, that the patients are completely healed and rehabilitated before we leave.
Okay.
In terms of how we time the surgery. But the post-ship activities may include continued education. We do some follow-up on some of the training. We also come back and do a careful evaluation of what we have done to sort of look at ways that we can improve the program in the future.
What you bring in the expertise, you bring in the medical resources. What does the government contribute to?
So the government contributes in partnership. They contribute the port facilities, so they give us the place to dock for at no charge. We will ask them to provide water. They will provide customs exemptions, so we're not paying duty on the supplies that we are bringing into the country. If the country has visa requirements, we would ask that they provide the visas free of charge for our staff. They provide for the registration of the vehicles. So support like that.
And that's Dr. Peter Lance with Mercy Ships. It's time for a break. When we come back, we'll have more on my discussion with Dr. Peter Lance, Mercy Ships International Medical Officer. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Voice of America's Health Chat News with Jackson Vunganyi. UN agencies are appealing for $20 million to contain an outbreak of cholera in Sudan. Since the cholera outbreak was declared on September the 8th in Blue Nile and Sennar states, Sudan's Ministry of Health reports that more than 230 people have become ill and 8 have died. UN agencies warn that more than 13,000 people could become infected in the next 6 months if cholera spreads to 6 other high-risk states. The spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Lark, says heavy flooding has been ongoing since July, and this is heightening the risk as cholera is a waterborne disease. In Nigeria, the Minister of Health announced a new malaria vaccine pilot that will reach about 360,000 children per year across the three countries. The Ministry of Health says that it will determine where the vaccine will be given, saying that it will focus on areas with moderate to high malaria transmission where the vaccine can have the greatest impact. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that the U.S. has recorded 7 new measles cases last week, taking the total cases for the year to 1,250 in the worst outbreak since 1992. CDC says that as of October the 3rd, the highly contagious and sometimes deadly disease has been reported in 31 states. But despite the outbreak, the U.S. retained its World Health Organization designation as a country that has eliminated measles. And two Americans and a Briton won the 2019 Nobel Medicine Prize for discovering a molecular switch that regulates how cells adapt to fluctuating oxygen levels, opening up new approaches to treating heart failure, anemia, and cancer. William Kaelin at the U.S. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and Harvard Medical Schools said that he was overwhelmed to get a pre-dawn call to say that he and two other doctors, Greg Semenza of Johns Hopkins University and Peter Radcliffe of Oxford University, had won the 9 million Swedish crown prize. The scientists' work established the basis for understanding of how oxygen levels are sensed by cells, a discovery that is being explored by medical researchers seeking to develop treatments for various diseases that work by either activating or blocking the body's oxygen sensing machinery. And that's it for today's health news. I'm Jackson Vunganyi.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. On the show today, we take a close look on the work of charity hospital ship, Mercy Ships. Here is more on my discussion with Peter Lenz, Mercy Ships International Medical Officer. When you are on board of the ship conducting surgery, what happens in case of emergencies during surgeries?
So we have a fully staffed hospital, including intensive care unit. So we would handle an emergency just like you would any emergency in any other hospital. So our staff are trained to deal with that. The crew, I should point out, is all volunteer. So the crew of the ship is about 400 people. About 190 of those are medical, doctors, nurses, and technicians. And at any given time, we'll have volunteers from 35 to 40 different countries working on the ship. In addition, we will hire somewhere between 200 and 250 local day workers who work with us, providing support services, translation, and a number of other sort of helpful things.
So the Africa Mercy has been in operation, I believe you said, more than 30 years?
The organization has been around for 40 years.
Okay.
We've been working exclusively in Africa for 30 years, but the Africa Mercy itself, this ship, has been in operation since 2007. Prior to that, we had other ships.
Since 2007, to specify to the Africa Mercy, what are some of the successes and challenges that you've come across?
Well, I think the biggest success is just the care we've been able to provide and the training that we've been able to provide. So last in May, Mercy Ships conducted its 100,000th surgical procedure over the 40 years. And the Africa Mercy itself has done over 30,000 operations in those 10 years. An organization like this, there are always operational challenges. We're constantly trying to learn to improve. And, of course, over time, we've changed the program. So our capacity building program has grown significantly over the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years, mm-hmm. in addition to the surgical services that we provide.
Speaking of that, which is part of the program, so what type of training do you offer?
So you can think of this in a couple of domains. So we have mentoring training on the ship. So local surgeons will come work side by side with our surgeons, learning new techniques or improving their techniques. We will have nursing staff work with our staff in terms of sort of mentoring. But in addition to that, on shore, we conduct many didactic and other training courses. We will train in techniques around safe anesthesia provision. We will very often conduct a six-month course for biomedical engineers to learn how to repair equipment better, courses in sterilization of equipment to prevent infection. And these courses may range from a few days to, as I said, the biomedical training 6 months, around basically improving surgical safety.
Now, what is currently happening in Senegal? Talk to us about what's going on.
So what's happened in Senegal is the ship arrived toward the end of August. 2 weeks ago, we began doing surgery. So currently there's surgery in general surgery, plastic surgery, and maxillofacial surgery is ongoing. In addition to that, the dental clinic has opened, and there are screening activities being conducted in various parts across the country as we select patients to basically fill out the remainder of the surgical schedule. The ship will be there until the end of May in 2020.
After May 2020, what country will you visit?
So the ship will then be going to Monrovia in Liberia.
How is life on the ship? I mean, I can imagine you as a volunteer, you take your time to go there. You spend quite a bit of time on the ship. What is life like for the staff?
So you can think of the ship as a small village. We have volunteers that come for just short periods of time. Some surgeons may only come for 2 weeks. We have many volunteers who come for many months, and we have some who are longer term who come for a number of years. There are 30 families aboard, about 50 children. We have a fully accredited school, and we even have a Starbucks. So life is, obviously you're living in close quarters, but there's a very strong community spirit. It's a strong Christian community.
And no one ever gets seasick?
Well, the ship is, remember, we're doing the operations tied up to the shore, so
yes,
people don't get seasick.
Okay.
When we're in the tied up. When we sail, occasionally, if people are prone to that, yes, that can happen.
I can imagine. Okay, Dr. Pitolian, so this is you said it's a Christian-based organization. So what is the message in doing this work?
So So I should point out is that it is a Christian organization. We take care of patients clearly of all faith.
Mm-hmm.
We also have volunteers, certainly short-term volunteers from all faiths. But essentially the mission of the organization is just sort of following the 2,000-year-old model of Jesus to bring hope and healing. So it's a desire to bring hope.
And how do you find volunteers, or how do volunteers find you and get recruited?
The easiest way, if people are interested in volunteering, is to go to the website, which is www.mercyships.org. We have offices in 16 countries that work to help raise funds and to find volunteers. But we have many volunteers that come from countries where we don't have offices. And about a third of the crew comes from countries in Africa.
Okay. Dr. Peter Lenz, thank you so much for your time and enlightening us on the work of Mercy Ships.
Thank you so much for having us.
And again, that was Peter Lenz, Mercy Ships International Medical Officer. We continue to look at surgeries, and now Voice of America's Steve Barragona has this report.
About 1% of surgery patients in Africa die of complications. That's compared to 0.5% on average worldwide.
It's really concerning when you see how high the mortality is in Africa, considering that, you know, the patients are generally fit and they're having a lot more minor surgeries.
University of Cape Town professor Bruce Picard and a group of colleagues gathered mortality data from 247 hospitals in 25 African countries, from Algeria to Madagascar. Their findings, published in the journal The Lancet, reveal a severe shortage of African surgeons, obstetricians, and anesthesiologists.
We're between 20 and 50 times lower than what we would consider a global minimum for providing safe surgery.
Most of the patients who died did not do so on the operating table, but in the days following surgery, he adds.
We're actually failing to recognize patients who are having complications in the post-op period, and so a minor complication actually ends up becoming a major complication.
But Picard says that offers an opportunity for improvement.
We can develop a risk calculator that will tell us before surgery which patients we think are going to get into trouble.
His group is planning a study in 2019 to see if they can reduce patient deaths by focusing limited resources on patients at the highest risk. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Next, VOA's Art Chimes takes a closer look at global surgery.
In its report published by The Lancet, the group says people are dying from conditions easily treated in the operating room, such as hernia, appendicitis, obstructed labor, and serious fractures. Stanford University surgery professor Thomas Weiser, a member of The Lancet Commission, says the need is great.
There are probably about 143 million operations that are needed just to meet basic needs in low and middle income countries. There are probably about 5 billion people that don't have access to safe, timely surgery with protection against catastrophic expenditure. And so those are, you know, pretty big numbers.
The Lancet Commission notes remarkable gains in global health over the last quarter century, but says surgery has not kept up with advances in other areas.
You can't achieve universal health care if you don't incorporate surgery.
Harvard Medical School's John Mira is one of the lead authors of the Lancet paper. Mira said increasing the availability of surgical treatments is not as simple as providing bed nets designed to protect against malaria. Surgery requires trained staff, proper facilities, and sterile instruments, but also reliable electricity, a system for getting patients to often distant hospitals, and a business model that does not bankrupt those who need an operation. The report suggests spending an additional $300 to $420 billion on surgery between now and 2030. That's a lot of money, but Mira says the Lancet Commission calculated each dollar spent would return $3 or $4 in economic benefit from lives saved and people returned to productive good health.
When you look at cost effectiveness in terms of dollars spent for welfare gains, for the positive impact on human beings, surgery is every bit as cost-effective as any of those other aspects.
There's no one best path for improving access to surgery, and the report cites several diverse countries, including Mexico and Rwanda, as having taken steps toward better availability of surgical services. For VOA News, this is Art Chimes reporting.
Now, bariatric surgery shrinks the stomach so people battling obesity can lose weight and regain their health. It's a drastic, life-changing procedure, but as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, some doctors think it should be done more often before patients become severely obese.
Sean Rogers struggled for more than 20 years to manage his weight, even as his diabetes kept getting worse.
By just dieting and continuing the cycle with the insulin, I was never going to lose the amount of weight I needed to lose to change the whole cycle and get the diabetes in really good control.
Insulin can make people feel hungry, making it even harder to lose weight. Yet resorting to bariatric surgery is expensive. In the U.S., health insurance companies won't pay for the procedure unless a patient's body mass index, or BMI, is at least 35, even if a patient's diabetes is uncontrolled. BMI is a measure of body fat based on a person's height and weight. Dr. Stacy Brett Hauer at Ohio State University says BMI is not always an indication of how well a patient is responding to treatment for diabetes.
BMI is not really a fair or accurate representation of who should be getting therapy.
Brett Hauer says the criteria for the surgery is outdated.
The patient who doesn't get the operation, we know very well that their disease will progress, their lifespan will be shortened if they don't get effective treatment.
The American Medical Association classifies obesity as a complex, chronic disease that requires medical attention. If it's left untreated, obesity can lead to heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Brett Hauer advocates early treatment for both obesity and diabetes.
No one asks somebody with cancer or heart disease to just to do it themselves. They have to participate in their care and do the right things, but there's, you know, also effective therapy being offered to those patients at the same time.
Since he had surgery to reduce the size of his stomach, Rogers has lost a significant amount of weight. His diabetes is also under control. He no longer needs oral medication and has gone from nearly 500 units of insulin per day to about 10.
It's changed my life so much, I would, you know, have anyone do it.
Diabetes is a global health issue. More than 400 million, 1 in 11 adults, have this disease. The World Health Organization estimates that number will rise significantly in the near future. If people with diabetes have bariatric surgery early on, their diabetes can be cured. For those who have had the disease for 10 years or more and need insulin shots, bariatric surgery won't reverse their diabetes, but Brett Hauer says it can greatly improve their health. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
That's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. If you would like more on the program, log on to voanews.com. Also, join us on Facebook and let's keep the conversation going. Just look for Health Chat, VOA Health Chat, that is. I'm your host, Lenore Mudo in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News.